Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
Oh, Bowen.
Oh, Matt. This is a major day.
It's a major day. I have the Onyi lit. I have the King candle lit in front of me. Let me tell you something. I'm looking over there at the Iyom candle. It's lit across from me. Of course, everyone, all of our readers know that my house is decked out in Onyi Home Essentials, the only essential home line.
I have a question to ask. Have you ordered your 5-wick or 7-wick? I think the 9 is out. I might be mistaken on the catalog on the offer.
No, there's. I don't think there's a 9 just yet.
There could
but
be.
But there, of course, I ordered 2 5-wicks. And yes. They're on the way to my apartment. They are on the way. I got matching ones for me and Sudi, and I could not be more excited. The Zen Wen of New Line.
The New Line. Okay, well, is there anything that we should just, any housekeeping we should get out of the way first? I feel like we're just kind of diving headfirst into the guest, and I have no qualms about that at all.
I have no qualms about that. This episode is not just an episode of podcasting, but it's a testament to why you always have to shoot your shot in the DMs, okay?
Yeah.
This is why that you have to go for it in life. I would say, in terms of housekeeping, it's definitely Oscar season. I mean, I've definitely seen some films. I'm actually in the middle of, have you heard of this film, Passing?
Yes.
By Rebecca Hall?
This has our favorites. This has Tessa Thompson. This has
and Ruth Negga.
Yeah. Yes.
It's exquisite. I'm watching it right now. I actually just watched King Richard the other day with Will Smith. That was amazing, about the Williams sisters. Everyone's got to stream that on HBO Max. Will Smith is unbeatable for the Oscar, I would say.
That might be a film I watch with the parents. Like they understand what's going on visually just enough. You got to understand.
Yeah.
Anyone out there with immigrant parents where there's sort of a language barrier, you gotta just watch something that's visually stimulating to sort of get them. Can I just say something? I took my parents to go see Hamilton when they were in town for my birthday. Poor dad fell asleep in the first act, and I kind of got upset at him. I was like, Dad, like, how can you fall asleep to this? It's so loud.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so loud. There's so much going on. There's such loud, explosive performance and even some effects.
I mean, I think we went to go see Les Mis in London, and I think he was like,
many booms in that show.
Many booms, but he was also like, wow, I love that circular stage, the way it spins around. I go, well, there's one here too. There's another circular stage on this one, Dad. Like, what gives? I think if you're watching stuff this holiday season with your family, if they have a hard time, you know, staying compelled to watch something, just do something big, bright, fun, like King Richard. I'm just saying.
The tennis is popping off in King Richard.
The tennis
I'll
is popping
that.
Off. I think this is, I'm really excited to watch this. I'm saving it for the holiday.
It's a really good one. It is a crowd pleaser, and it's an amazing story. I mean, Will Smith is great. Anjanou Ellis, who plays Oracine Price, their mother, is great. The girls who play the Williams sisters are amazing. And it's just, obviously, we all know how the story ends, but it's kind of nice to see how the story begins. Like, it's really very winning, and it's a triumph, I would say.
I love it.
And then I also saw an early screening of the film Don't Look Up, the new Netflix movie that's coming out, the new Adam McKay, and that was It Will Stay With You. So look out for that one too. But basically, none of this is as important.
No, I think we should just get right into it.
I think we should get right into it, because really the pop culture moment is really Housewives of Potomac reunion happening right now. And our guest, I don't know about you, Bowen, but when I turned on the Housewives of Potomac, the first episode of the reunion, and I saw who was sitting right on Andy's right
next to Andy, yeah.
I said, absolutely.
And someone who does not take that positioning lightly, in a literal sense, like, she knows the placement, the meaning behind the placement, and oh my God.
New star of the show, basically. They said, Karen Huger, move over.
Well, I just want to say, you remember beginning of season 5, we were watching it together or just checking in with each other, and I was just like, Wendy's got it. I was like, Wendy's got it. I love this. From the first episode, I'm like, I'm very interested. And honestly, not to like be reflected too much in this, but I go, it is actually very meaningful to have this housewife who has this interesting relationship with her mother as this immigrant who expected a lot of her and who has opinions about her career path.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is extremely powerful to watch on a TV show like The Real Housewives. And I hope that it like has sort of broadened people's scopes on like what that is. Speaking of her mother, she has a book coming out, Tears of My Mother, The Legacy of My Nigerian Upbringing. It's out in May of 2022.
You can pre-order now.
Pre-order now. We've been waving around our Onyi Home Essentials. I've got the Onyi, the namesake candle right here.
A lot of it is sold out right now, which is a great sign. That means she's in demand.
That means she's in demand, but we've been over that already. What else, Matt? What else?
Political commentator and obviously the star right on Andy's right on that couch on The Real Housewives of Potomac. And I don't think we could be more excited to welcome. And let's address her correctly. Please welcome into your ears, Dr. Wendy Osepo! Here we go.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad to be here.
We cannot even tell you how excited we are. I mean, when I looked down at my phone, it was a better DM, you know, response than I've gotten from any gay man whose DMs I've slipped in.
I loved it. I was like, I am honored. It's so funny because when you reached out to me, I was like, they want me. I felt so honored.
You're the first housewife we've ever had.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
100%.
I hear so many great things about your podcast. And even when I put it in my Insta story, you know, like people are like, oh, I love that podcast. I'm like, I know. I'm so excited.
Well, it's our honor. It's our honor. What are you talking about?
It's my honor. I mean, honestly, like, thank you. Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
This is too much. How are you spending this holiday week, Wendy? What's on the agenda?
So Thanksgiving is coming up. Thanksgiving is like a blip for my family. And I think it's because of the two different cultures. Like Nigerians, mm-hmm. we don't do Thanksgiving. We do it here in America. But it's like, okay, let's get over this hump so we can get to the big shebang, which is Christmas. So Christmas is like big for us. But this week is spent like decorating the house. Like they, you know, the peoples, as I like to call them, came in and zhuzhed up the home for us. And I'm behind on grading for my students. And it's fall break at Hopkins. And so I'm catching up on my grade book. So that's my life this week.
What is the grade book these days? Is it because I kind of yearn for the days of, remember someone tweeted this, like, remember when you would peek at the physical grade book on your, let's just say like you're in grade school, elementary school, middle school, when you would peek over at that grid page and it'd be like 195, whatever. And you just like get a sense of your, and now it's all electronic, I assume.
Yes, it's all electronic. Okay. You know, I put
no peeking.
And then it's like every assignment has a different weight. So I hate math. I'm not good at math. So I'm like, this is only worth 5 points. So now I'm using my little calculator on my iPhone. Like, so what's a 3 out of 5? Is that a A or is that B? What's like? So I despised it. Nothing is out of 100. Like, let's go back to everything's out of 100. No. Yeah. The entire semester is out of 100. So everything is broken down. Sorry. I'm a millennial professor, and it comes out in my aggravation at all faculty meetings. They hate me.
No, but I have to ask. So like, are you back in the classroom now, or is it still all virtual?
So the good news is the program I teach in was always virtual. Every once in a while, I did face-to-face classes. So the pandemic really didn't impact my teaching because we've always been virtual. It's just that in the spring, I'll pick up one or two classes that are face-to-face because the weather is nice. I like to be on campus. Yeah. But now I'm like, hell no, I'm not in the classroom. I'm not doing that.
No.
You're saying how your students, some of your students, mostly your students are very aware, but keep the boundary, the distance between you being on, them being aware that you're on the show. But you've had a couple be like, hey, I had this question about public affairs stuff, whatever. But then what's the deal with Robin and Giselle or whatever? And you're like, I can't tell you that.
I swear, the conversations for the most part, and when I say most part, I mean like 99% of my students, they don't question, they don't say anything. It's completely professor-student relationship. But then you always have those few who will say something like, hey, I was looking at page 3 of the syllabus and I wanted to know about the final exam and whether Karen Huger is really shooting in Syria. I'm like, how did we get, How did we get here? How
whether she's really from, shooting in Surrey. That is so funny.
How did we go from the syllabus to Surrey and peanuts? I'm so confused. And it escalates that quickly. It's not even like a period between the syllabus conversation and then the Karen Hugo conversation. It's like a running thought. And I'm just like, okay, all right.
Doesn't that put something on you to be like, well, I can't think any differently of this student. I can't let the professor-student relationship be affected by what they just brought into this. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that puts the onus on you to, like, I don't know, like, brush it off? Is that fair to say?
Do you feel that? No, what I have learned is I answer whatever question they have about the course, and I put, LOL, I saw your last question. You have to stay tuned, smiley face. It's literally a copy and paste.
Yeah, and I love it.
It's literally a copy and paste I put for everything. Just to say, I acknowledge it, I get it, but LOL, smiley face. You know, I mean, what can I say? Like, they want to know about, you know, they want to know about Candace's album. They want to know if they could come to the album release. I'm like, girl, no, you cannot come to the album.
I have to say, I was on Instagram this morning and she posted a little bit of her singing Alone by heart, and the vocals are there, and they've always been there, and I really like the album, and Drive Back has basically become the theme song to this podcast. But she's got the real chops. Like, there's, and I saw her on Kelly Clarkson and she killed it.
I think she did well. I think she killed it. I think that, you know, if nothing else, I'm happy for her chasing what she loves and what she has been doing since she was younger. No shade to anyone, but, you know, Candace is not like, okay, I'm on this platform now, what, I'm going to start singing. No, she has pictures of her singing since she was little. So I'm always a big proponent of people chasing their dreams, no matter what it is. So I'm glad she's doing that.
Yeah. It's been really interesting, like, because from the first season to the second season, obviously, it's like, it's almost like a Wendy 2.0. There has been like this glow up, if you pardon me using the expression. But what I really loved about it is, like, it is actually a progression from season one. If you really think about it, it doesn't really come out of nowhere, because you've been saying since the first season that there was parts of you that you've been wanting to explore that you've maybe been hesitant to explore in the past, because you do have this relationship with your mother and with your, you know, Nigerian upbringing that sort of prevents you from stepping outside the box too much, because you have this expectation with yourself, with your mom, with your culture. So I actually think it's not really coming too far outside the box, because you already made the big decision to be on a program like The Real Housewives of Potomac. And then it shouldn't feel too surprising for anyone, like your castmates or anyone that's watching, to see you also branch out into things that housewives have done in the past that we shouldn't be surprised at your interests, like Home Essentials. So what would you have to say to people that are like, still on this narrative of, but where's this new Wendy coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly would say to them, you know, look at how we ended season five. Season five, it ended with myself having the conversation with my mom. She gave me her blessing, so to speak, and said, you know what? I'm proud of you. Go chase your dreams. So if you stop it there and you pick up from season six, it's like, okay, so now I'm living for me. And in our culture, people may not know this, but part of the expectation is not just education, but for women is also family. And I finally had a girl. That was like the full circle moment. Like, you have your two boys, you have your girl, you've completed what you were set out to do as a Nigerian woman. Now go live. I have nothing else to beg of you, because you have the degrees, you have the children, you have the husband. Now go live. And live I did. And I don't know who else didn't get plastic surgery while we were in the pandemic. It's like the perfect time to heal. It's like the perfect time to heal. I mean, I know so many of my friends. I didn't get
one.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I got a new nose.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. So many people got new noses because we had masks on. So I just, I mean, I get it. And I'm not faulting people, because I do understand if you leave somewhere, as memory serves you, you're thinking about the professor. And let me speak to that too. I feel like culturally, and when I say culturally, I mean as a society, we put people in professions in boxes. If you're a professor, you look like this. If you're a doctor, you look like this. And so here I am, this professor, and I got my tits out. And it's like, well, wait, this is not what we were ingrained to believe. And I love music. And Nas has this song, has this lyric on Hate Me Now with him and Diddy. And he says, people fear what they don't understand. And that's the truth. When we don't understand something, it's almost like, wait, that's not what I was taught. That doesn't make sense. That's not registering. Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
How do you feel like you can like assuage that fear in people though? Not that it's your responsibility, but I kind of feel this way sometimes, not to like, I don't know, lionize myself or anything, but like, I feel like I kind of always every single day, Wendy, feel that way about like, I don't think an audience watching, you know, this show that I'm on really knows what to make of this like queer Asian guy. And so that's why, like, that's where a lot of their anger comes out and their frustration. They like vent all of these weird things onto me. And I'm like, oh, it's just because you've never like seen someone like me before. And that's okay. But I kind of think about this with everybody. I'm like, how do you sell yourself to people when they just like are kind of coming into this by default saying, I don't get their whole deal?
What I have come to realize, and I'm not, you know, all knowing, is I feel like our biggest form of revolution is just to exist. Because I don't know about you, I didn't see me growing up. I never saw a professor who was, yes, a professor, but also very confident in her sexuality in a public space. And I think that it always sucks being the first. I'm not saying I'm the first, but sometimes when you have such a big platform, it puts you on this pedestal that you are
isolated.
Yeah, this person.
Yeah.
And if I can like just reach out to everyone who has reached out to me and said, thank you. I'm a doctor, I'm a pharmacist, I'm a firefighter. And you have allowed me to live in my truth, to say I don't have to go with the label or the stereotype that comes with me, then that's what I have done. That is my contribution to the conversation, because people need to see us. People need to see you existing in your truth, because when they don't, then we are helping continue the narrative of what people who look like us, think like us, love like us are supposed to act like. And that's not helping at all.
Wendy, this is it. This is why you tune in. This is why you watch her talking head on the political shows.
Yeah, so funny.
This is the power.
I would say, like, when you came on the show, and I remember you were on Watch What Happens Live one time, and Andy said, I'm so proud to have you as a housewife. I really do think, I remember him saying that, and I was like, yeah, it really is. You are a different kind of real housewife. And so I was wondering, how did it come to you? Were they scouting? Did you have a friend on the show? Because I know often it's like, you know, they try to make it so that it feels like a real friend group, but how did it come to you? And I wonder what the process of you accepting the role on the show was like, because it had to be a consideration.
Yeah, so it's funny because I knew I had met two of the ladies prior to even being in this universe type of thing. But I had someone who, I mean, I don't even have a title for them. They're a connector. And I was in New York filming a political segment. And she said, hey, would you ever do reality TV? And I said, I don't know, but never say never. I am a big YOLO type of person. And so she said, okay, I want you to meet some people. And so I had a meeting with some of the head honchos for the production company that does Potomac. And what I thought would be a 30-minute meeting ended up lasting for hours. And we had a great conversation. And after that conversation, they were like, we love you. And the rest is history. But I didn't go into it. I didn't, you know, apply to a casting call or anything like that. It was really a friend who said, would you ever consider this? And at that point, I was at a really weird space in my career, meaning I have been doing political commentary for so long. And I was like, okay, what's next for me? And I said, whatever I do next, I have to do it quickly, because I know that my biological clock in my head for me, is mm-hmm. ticking, and yeah. I want to have one more baby. So when she presented the opportunity to me, I was like, yeah, sure. And the reason I added that last piece is when we came home from New York, my whole family was with me from that meeting. That week, we conceived Cameron. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like this weird alignment, because if I would have conceived her prior to the meeting, I don't think I would have taken it, you know, because I would have been like, oh, motherhood, you know, this is perfect. You know, my last one, let me just take it easy. But literally at like when we came back, she was conceived. And so it's just so funny how, you know, destiny works and how everything lined up.
And then that explains because I think the timing, am I getting this right? You guys shot season 5, like 2 months after Cameron was born?
Yes. Cameron was born in July. Production came knocking on my door in August. And we started filming the first week of September. And so it just, and I remember my interview for, you know, with the executives, they said, would you have any other kids? You know, would you consider? And I said, yeah, I would want one more. I want a girl. And I even said, I want a girl and I want to have her now because I want her to be able to walk by the time me and my husband celebrate our 10-year wedding anniversary. Literally.
Wow, that is planning. That says it all.
Yeah, so here we are.
Yeah.
Back to talking about your mother, like, talk about like how liberating that was, because I do relate to that a lot too, where like I grew up all the way through college thinking I am duty bound to what my parents want from me in my career.
And Bone it was this real pre-med. Yeah.
I was pre-med. And then Matt remembers this moment where I fully fell into this depression after we graduated college.
Absolutely.
Where I was like, I don't think I want to go to med school. I think I might try to pursue this showbiz thing.
And well, he was going to go home to Denver. And I remember I had seen Bowen perform all throughout college. And I was like, that is absolutely not happening. And we said, we basically anchored Bowen to New York to keep him performing. But it was a big thing for you.
But it was this huge conversation that I had to have with my parents where they weren't even like, I don't think they ever gave me the blessing to like do this. But even just that tiny, tiny like interstitial space that I found to be like, okay, well, you're not saying that you're going to disown me if I do this, so I'm going to do it, was like such a moment, I think, in like in like the first generation development of people. And so I don't know, like, what was that like having that conversation with your mother, having Cameron's role, and then like making the decision, how soon was it after that where you decided I'm going to go for everything that I want to go for?
Wow, that's a powerful question. It's actually funny because I said to myself, I can only have this conversation with her with cameras rolling because I know she won't kill me in front of people. So that was like my safety net.
That's so funny.
So people didn't know that, because I think sometimes we have like these hard conversations and people are like, well, it's kind of weird that you're having this, because even this season I had a conversation with my mom during a photo shoot and people were like, why is she talking about this in front of her mom in front of a photo shoot? Because she can't kill me when people are there. So,
And there was a distance too. You were horizontal on the chaise and she was like all the way over there. Yeah. So she couldn't make it to you.
Like, perfect. You know, having that conversation was really hard for me because, Bowen, as you said, it's like for me, being a first gen is so hard because you're straddling two worlds. And in my book, Tears of My Mother, I talk about how first generations, we often straddle two worlds to the point that I propose that we create a new name for the third world, in a sense, right? That we're straddling. Because one feet is here, another feet is here, but we occupy that middle space. And it's something that I feel like only us know. And it was so hard for me. And I clap for you because at least you went and chased your dreams. I didn't start chasing my dreams until I accomplished everything that she wanted me to. And part of that first step was actually doing The Real Housewives, because she couldn't say no, because I've already been a professor. I've already received my degrees. I've already been married. I've already had kids. And so it was hard for her to say no, because it's like, you've done what you need to do. And I think what's really important that some people may not understand is, I understand that for everyone, your children are your pride. But for Nigerians in particular, your children filled the gap for what you didn't accomplish. And so that's why they push us so hard. Because for us, I have friends that their parents or their father are taxi cab drivers. And for their father, that's okay that that's all he achieved. But his child is now a medical doctor. So you cannot look down on him because of what his child has done. And it's really a delicate balance, because you know that your parents have sacrificed so much for you to be here, but you want to live your own life. But in the same breath, you don't want to let them down, because you know that they didn't accomplish what they wanted to because they sacrificed for you.
Yes.
And it's like this big mind.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. It's just so horrible. But I mean, I don't have any, you know, I don't have any beautiful answers for it. I just know that.
No, that's a beautiful conceptualization of it, though. That's all people need.
I mean, I just hope that the next generation, we as first gens, for our children, we allow them to dream. I don't know if our parents allowed us to dream. And if I could pass any gift to my kids, I would say, you can dream, and you can dream big.
You know, it. I will also say, you have the most beautiful children.
Y'all, you're so
sweet. every time your kids come on screen, I just smile. Cameron. And it really is. They have such good energy. They seem like such happy kids. And obviously, your husband is like a fan favorite at this point. I mean, we stan Eddie in this house.
Let me be a doting mom. So yesterday, Eddie and I went to parent-teacher conference for Carter and Cruz. And we went to Cameron's last week. And their teacher for Carter and Cruz, they said, you know, your sons are so compassionate. Whenever they have a child struggling, you know, Carter, well, his teacher said, he's the first one to help. And Cruz's teacher said, he's the first one to help, to the point that Cruz was out last week and a kid that he walks to the bus to make sure his friend gets the bus, missed the bus because Cruz wasn't there. And the teacher's like, oh my God, I forgot Cruz didn't come to school today, so this kid missed the bus. The reason I'm telling this story is, here I am in my hoodie and leggings at this meeting, crying like a baby. Because I'm like, my kids, you know, even my daughter, they said the same thing. I'm like, the one adjective that everyone has used to describe my kids is compassion. And I was like, and so I am such a bitch. And I'm crying because I'm like, I want to be better because they have this trait and I don't know why I don't have it. And I'm literally, and Eddie's looking at me like, literally, his face is like this. He's looking at me like in this conference and he's like, it's not about you. Get yourself together. This is about the kids.
That is so funny.
But in that moment, I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, you know, because at the core of this, I want my kids to be successful. Yes, yes, yes. But I just want to make good human beings. And to hear that, I was just like, oh my God, how did my parents fail me? I'm not compassionate.
No.
But They did not. But I do want to ask, though, because whenever we have people that have been on reality television on the podcast, and we have had a few, one of the most fascinating questions, I think, and everyone always gives a different answer, is when you see yourself edited to and depicted as a character, God, I can already tell it has to be such a mind fuck, because, you know, even like when Bowen and I see ourselves on television playing characters, it's weird. And then when you see yourself as yourself, but it's also filtered through this, you know, need that the producers and editors have to make you into a part of the narrative. I want to know what your experience is with that and how much you recognize yourself.
Oh my gosh. I can cry answering this question. And I don't know why, because I feel like, oh gosh, that's such a, you know, and you know the saying, check on your strong friend. So you don't know it, but like, that's like you checking in, because It's like,
oh,
no, seriously, because, you know, you play, we're on this show and everything we say, we said it, but everything has context. Right. And I feel like the viewers sometimes are not privy to the context, or things are cut and spliced. And so even if it was said in one way, now it's a whole nother way. So when I see myself, I feel like you guys see the worst version of me.
Oh.
It's who I am because I said those things, but that's not all I am. That's the piece.
Yeah.
You know, like if you see me telling someone, hey, don't talk about my family. Yes, that's one piece. But the larger piece is because I am this mom who goes to PTA meetings and I care about my kids being compassionate and we do homework together and I just want to make sure they're okay. And so when you talk about my family, you are touching my Achilles heel because the only thing in the world that can break me is my family. But you don't get that piece. You don't get that story, that backstory, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like If we're talking specifically about the Williamsburg moment at the whiskey tasting, Matt was in town. This is one of the few episodes where Matt and I watched together
this season.
and that episode, I mean, I had chills. I mean, Matt, you remember, like I held my breath that entire 10-minute span or whatever, and like by the end, like, you and I were like on our feet, just applauding, clapping for Wendy.
Well, you essentially, you booked season 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 with that scene. I mean, it cemented the legend because as fans, of course, we want to see Giselle and Robin get dragged because, I mean, you know, as fans, and also saying this, you know, with compassion for them as the full human beings that they are, knowing that they're playing their roles. But I think that it would be disingenuous for any fan of the show to watch that and feel like that was responsible of them to do, because and now to see them play, you know, and not to get too much into the narrative of the season, because people can watch the reunion for that, but I think it is really obtuse for them to not recognize what they've done when they bring something like that narrative onto the show, which, as you said, goes from being known by hundreds of people to millions, because as you've been saying, your family, as they grow older, can now recognize that this was a narrative on the show when it had absolutely no basis in truth. And so it is a lack of respect for you, and you as a mama bear and as someone who's a proud person and like a lover of your husband, like, of course you're going to go all the way in. And so, yes, we appreciate that moment because we love to see Giselle get dragged for her foolishness and Ashley, you know, be exposed as the henchman that she is on the show. But also, like, I want you to know that we 100%, at least we, Bowen and I, know where that comes from, rooted in what you've been saying.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate that so much. You know, it's, We sign up for this show and we don't, we know what comes with it. We get it. We understand it. You know, but what I realized last year, the end of last year, is you have to know who you are when you come on this platform. Because if you don't, you will have millions of people telling you who you are. So you have to know who you are. Because when I tell you, people will tell you, no, this is who you are. And for some people, they start to believe it. So I hold very close to my family and the people who know when and the people who know me. Because when I say that I am, you know, Eddie will tell you I'm the biggest softy ever. And it's so funny because I was watching the reunion and I guess the new narrative they're trying to play is that I control him. So,
they do that. Yeah.
That's a new narrative because they have him answering the questions in like quick bites, but he literally gave a whole dissertation. And the very end, Andy asked me a question like, so Wendy, what are your final thoughts on this? I said it, but then they played that in a way that I cut him off and I spoke for him, and the whole world is saying, well, why don't you let him speak? Why would you cut him off? I didn't. I was asked a question. I was asked the question, but you didn't see that.
Right.
So it's those moments that you're just like, man, let me change the damn channel. I don't want to watch this.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, there's no way that it's not completely dissociative for you to watch yourself completely like reshuffled, spliced, like assembled differently, literally, in like this real way. And I think, but with what you were saying earlier, like I bring up me and Matt watching it together because I think there are a lot of viewers who are watching a moment like that and thinking, oh no, I do actually see the nuance behind this moment, that there is more to it than even this, something so emotional and big, and there's obviously conflict here, but like I think there is this implicit understanding of like what was going on, what was at play. Like I completely understood where you were coming from personally.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I feel like you've done a very remarkable job of like presenting the totality of yourself, even though there's no way for a show like this to like represent that.
Yeah.
Like on your behalf, yeah, in the best way. Yeah. I feel like you do bring all of yourself to the show, which is why I love you, which is why I've gone on record to say that you're my favorite housewife.
I appreciate that. Oh, I really appreciate that. You know, I think that for all of us, we come into this and we just, you know, the hope is just to bare your soul. And what Eddie was telling me, because he's my therapist, he told me you have to be your authentic self. But with that, you also have to know that people will digest you how they want to. And you can't be mad at how someone digests you. And that has stuck with me. And, you know, I am just moving with the adage, it's better to be hated for who I am than loved for who I'm not. So if this is me and you love it, thank you. If this is me and you hate it, I'm sorry. But at least I'm giving you who I really am.
Oh no, don't apologize for it.
Yeah, I feel like you really are. You do elevate the show. And I would say, like, obviously next week is the last episode of the reunion, the end of this season, and it is hosted by Nicki Minaj. So before we ask the question of what was the culture that made you say culture is for you, I want to know if you can tell us a little bit about the experience of being at a reunion hosted by Nicki Minaj, and if you can tease how it went at all, or just explain what it's like to be in the presence of
royalty,
truly the queen. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I was just so taken aback, because it's layered, because first it's okay, Nicki Minaj is hosting the reunion. That in itself is like, whoa. The second piece is Nicki Minaj watches your show. So it's really so many pieces to it. But once I found out that Nicki Minaj was going to be the guest, it was in that moment that you guys see the preview, because she started out by sending us a video saying, I can't make it, but I love you guys. I was like, oh,
the blurriest video in the world.
We bought that, and I was completely okay. And I was honored by it, because I'm like, she did a video for us. This is great. Let's move on. Let's get to the questions. Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But I'll be lying to you if I didn't feel like something was up. I started to feel like something was up after our first break. I don't know what it is. I blame everything on my mommy senses. Like, I know my child could be upstairs. I'm like, Carter's doing something bad. I don't know why. I just feel it. And I was like, I turned to Candace and I was like, I think Nicki Minaj is here. I lied to you, and she said, what? No, I don't think so. I said,
so she doesn't have that mommy sense yet.
I was like, wait, something is going on. And I don't know. And so when Andy said the whole thing about, I think I need a drink, I was like, she is here. And it was such an amazing moment. And just let the record show, you're going to see at the very end, something happens. But just know that the bottle that she's holding when she walks in is now in my collection of alcohol.
Wow. So
I can tell my kids, I snagged that sucker. I was like, none of you ladies are going to get this. I think everyone was so caught up taking pictures with her. I was like, no. The bottle where she walks in, she says, I'm here, bitches, that bottle. Bitches. And we do something with that bottle. That bottle is still in my house.
You were not letting Andy put that in the clubhouse. No, that was going to the Osefa household. No.
It is coming to the Osefa household for all of my pain this season that I have experienced. Yes. That is my token.
That's your reward.
Yes.
And she really goes in on people.
What? I have never felt so... It's almost like you're... So I went almost close to last. And it's like you're watching someone push your friends off a cliff.
Oh my God.
You're hearing your friends scream as they go down. And in your head, you're saying, I'm next.
Yeah.
I'm next.
The firing squad.
So the firing squad starts with Ashley. And you see me and Carrie holding each other and shaking because we're like, oh my God. And so in that moment, we all realize she is going to reload and it will be your turn soon. It was so chaotic. Oh my God.
Because you can tell that even in the, I don't know if it was the preview for the episode or something for next week, but like Mia is completely thrown. And I'm like, if you can like, I mean,
thrown
Mia,
off a cliff.
Thrown off a cliff, as Wendy says.
Now, Wendy, we have to ask you the question that we ask all of our Lost Culturistas guests, which is, what was the culture that made you say culture is for you? Bowen, can you explain more in detail?
This is the sort of formative, foundational pop culture that kind of set you off. That was the seed crystal that blossomed into this beautiful lattice of culture in your life.
Oh, man. Okay, so can I pick more than one?
Yes.
So two. Oh, man, I have so many. Okay, so I'll do movie and music.
Okay, perfect.
For movie, I you know, I'm a child of an immigrant and I have an older sister. And so why I say that is while my mom was working, it was me and my sister. And we often turned to movies to tell us what life could be if my mom worked hard enough.
Wow.
And Clueless.
That's my favorite movie of all time.
Really?
Yeah, I just watched it the other day because I watch it once a month.
Oh, Clueless. Changed my life. And once I saw that, I saw how the other side of the world lives for us. Yeah. You know, we were living in a two-bedroom apartment, and to see these kids and to see her go to her closet and push a button and her clothes rotated, I was like, this is amazing. And it never left me. And I was like, this is it. That movie, as well as, gosh, I know the song. Top that. I don't really give a about topping that. What song is that about the girl who, the teen, what is it?
Teen Witch, Anna says.
Is it Teen Witch? That was my
movie. Teen Witch.
Listen, that movie and The Boy Who Could Fly, those were like my 90s.
Fantastic answers.
Honestly, Clueless, you know what it was? We were all young when that first came out, but I just remember the image of Alicia Silverstone in that yellow Jean-Paul Gaultier like plaid ensemble that she had picked out in her computer, and then her walking down, and then Dion, Stacey Dash in that like hat, you know, them walking down and just talking to each other this way, and then, you know, as if like the whole thing, it felt like it was just I didn't know why, but it hit me right in my like, I don't know what it was, but I was like, I need to know everything. it was so much.
It's this timeless, it created this very timeless fantasy. I mean, you know, it's Jane Austen or whatever, but like, it's still this, but the image of going to that high school and dressing up that way and like driving through the palm trees, like I just, like that is so indelible to everybody, I think, especially people of our age, you know, like what a huge movie.
No, that was huge. That was major. And thank you to the casting for making.
I was going to say.
Dion. Right? Yes. For making Dion a woman of color, because too often those movies existed, like, you know, you could have, you know, the Breakfast Club, like those movies, but I didn't have representation. But to see Dion, you know, in that movie to see Stacey Dash, it was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Yeah.
And also, you know, the thing about Dion in Clueless is, yes, she is the best friend character, but she also has her own arc. In fact, we actually know more about Dion's romantic life than we do Cher's. And also, you know, she has experiences that Cher doesn't have. You know, you get that Cher, like, takes a lot of cues from her and from her relationship with Murray, played by Donald Faison. And also, it's just, they have this entire thing going on, and it's not just the stock best friend, which of course, as we know, people of color and queer people often are just the appendage, but that was not the case with this movie. And it's just, it is ahead of its time, and it actually, it's important for people growing up to see it, because then they recognize, like, a diverse group of friends is not just, like, you know, it exists, it's out there. And I just thought, especially at an affluent school, like, that representation too is just, it had to mean a lot.
It meant a lot. And for me in my 30s, the fact that it still sticks with me is a testament to how much it does mean and how much it did mean, you know? So,
yeah.
So my music piece.
Music, yes.
Okay, so I have two. The first would be Little Kim's Crush on You video. When she switched her freaking wig five times from red to yellow to blue to green, and she had those contacts in her eyes. Let me tell you, I was in the seventh grade and I said, I don't want to wear glasses anymore. And my mom said, okay, you can get contacts. I got the same colored contacts as her and wore them. Up until college, when I finally said, okay, enough is enough. Up until college, because of her, she literally changed how I viewed fashion, how I viewed sexuality, just how she just dominated in that 5-minute video. I said, this is it. All right. Second, Britney Spears. Yes. I loved Britney Spears' song. I think it's I'm a Slave for You, where she had the yellow python and she had the jeans below her waist and then the crop the low top. Rise. And then she did, baby. That moved the culture. Baby. That moved the culture for me in so many ways, because it's just something about these women who just are so sure and so confident about themselves and just the way in which they are showing the world that I'm owning this space. It's just, oh my gosh, that.
Those are fantastic answers. Have any of you guys seen the Janet Jackson documentary that just came out through the New York Times?
Is that the one that explores the thing with her and Justin Timberlake?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But basically, like, everyone is sort of, the setup of it all is just like talking about Janet's career up until this shift when I think it was Control was the album where like things like really started to change. But before that, like her first two albums were very sort of like fulfilling the Joe Jackson, like, you know, thing of like, okay, it's wholesome. It's, you know, it should appeal to all people. And then Control was when she started to like own her sexuality. And that's when the culture did not know what to do with this Black woman who was owning her physicality this way. And I mean, talk about like Lil Kim, like sort of doing that completely in this revolutionary way herself. But with Janet, it was just this thing of like, okay, and so of course society is going to pile onto this woman for doing something that falls out of line with what they value. And so of course they're going to side with this man who profits off proximity to Black culture and all this stuff. Highly recommend it. But I mean, both Lil Kim and Britney Spears, I think, fantastic answers and sort of like all, and I'm just sort of fresh off watching this documentary. I'm like, there's something about that time in the culture. I know we all talk about like, oh, early aughts, like impactful, whatever. But like Lil Kim is so major on so many levels, and I still don't think we've processed the impact.
We don't give her flowers. Little Kim is why we're able, you know, Bowen, you and I were having this conversation of us occupying this space and people looking at us and not knowing what to do with us. Little 100%. Kim is why you're able to digest Cardi B. Little Kim is why you're able to digest Nicki Minaj. That is, she kicked that door open. And a lot of these women literally owe their entire image to her, because there was never a time before that women would rap, but they felt they had to wear men's clothing, like the Queen Latifahs of the world, the MC Lights of the world. They came before her, but Lil' Kim was the first one to say, I can rap about this stuff that, you know, may seem gangster to some people, but I can do it while being sexy. That's never been done before. So hats off to her.
Hats Sometimes off. I just sit and listen to how many licks, and I just like let it happen to me, and I just like, because she's going in so hard, and it's like you don't think she can heighten it, but the whole song is this build, and it just gets even more. And also that chorus, that how many licks does it take till you get to the center of the, I'm just like, the whole thing is driving, and it's just taking you to Mars.
I am
obsessed, and you're right, because you know. It's funny that you say Britney Spears and also Lil Kim. And in a way, you know, looking at these girls in Clueless who, you know, were confident and owned themselves, it seems like, and sometimes I think like the things that are most important to us are the things that we need the most. So you as a young person, what was the relationship to, like, I don't know what it is in the culture with your mother. What was the education or relationship to sexuality like? Was it something that you found yourself learning more from outside of that? Or, like, what was that relationship?
I learned, my mother and I had conversations about what happens to a woman's body as she matures, what happens if you do have sex, like, what, you know, what the result of that is. But as far as my own sexuality, that's something that I had to look to the media for. Right. It wasn't conversations that were that open. And that's why when you guys see me in season 6, it's me being liberated too. We started filming the second week of February, and I had my surgery the end of January, I believe. So you guys are seeing someone who just got this new body, and she's like, yes. And sexuality is something that oftentimes is quelled in Nigerian society, especially for females. It doesn't happen as rampant, but they still have female, you know, genital mutilation in Nigeria, where only men should enjoy the spoils of sexuality and women shouldn't. So it's like this sense of ownership, and I feel like I peaked late in life, because my friends, I feel like they understood it when they were younger, when they were in their 20s, and I'm just getting into it. I'm like, oh yes, I'm loving this. And I'm like 10 years late here, guys, but whatever.
I relate.
Honestly, so do I. Because I think as gay men too, like when you look at what, especially when we were growing up, and this is why I think it's great that there is so much more representation. I mean, it matters in every sense because, I mean, as gay men, I'll just say it, like, you don't really figure out how to have sex until you're in your mid to late 20s. In our generation anyway, like, at least that's how I can speak for myself. Like, I was unsure of that because we really didn't, yes, we had sex education, but it was entirely focused on the heterosexual point of view. I mean, there was absolutely no education. You know, our friend John Early has a joke. I'm going to butcher it, but it's like, I think in high school I could have benefited from less trigonometry and more how to use my butt for sex. Like, and it's just like, and it's like, I identify with that because we were just kind of like thrown to the wolves. Like, how are you exactly going to learn not just about the mechanics, but about the specifics and the nuances of sexuality if you don't have anyone telling you, because either they don't know or it feels taboo? You know what I mean?
I love that. And I think that that's so important for you to say to me as a heterosexual woman, because so many times I'm in these spaces and we have conversations about diversity. And I just think that, and I often say this in my meetings, I feel like we put so much emphasis on racial diversity or gender diversity, but we need to understand what it means for people who come from different backgrounds all over, and how we educating them. Because, like, I never thought of that. I never thought of sexual education and how that looks at it through one lens. Like, I would have never thought about that? And what does that mean for people who are trying to reconcile like I was? Like, what does sex look like? And for you guys, you didn't even have anything. And right. That breaks my heart. Oh no.
But we figured it out, I promise you.
I hate you.
They were talking, it's funny because they were talking about it on The Real, like it was a topic on The Real. It was like one of the hot topics. They were saying, like, they were discussing whether or not anal sex should be taught during sex education. And a couple of the hosts were like, this is too much. Like, I don't want my child, like, this feels like a little extra. And I feel like there wasn't a voice saying, well, remember, that is actually how some people have sex and they don't have another option. So that's just a different perspective, I think, to look at it. Like, of course, like, if I'm a heterosexual person with heterosexual children and I think, you know, butt sex, I'm like, okay, wait, maybe I'm hesitant. But I do think it's important to voice, and that's why I think it's actually crucial to have more representation in terms of like the voices teaching, you know, just acknowledging the spectrum of sexuality amongst everyone and like radically changing the way that we speak to each other and respecting each other's sexual identities, gender identities, et cetera, because it's not monolithic. And I think that we need to be more respectful, definitely, but absolutely at the baseline, just more aware and more, like you said before, compassionate about what people need.
That's so good.
Dr. Matt.
I love that. I addressed you correctly. Yes. I love it.
Well,
I just think until like we get there in terms of the educational aspect of it, like I think what Wendy's saying is very apt, where it's like you are only, a lot of people are getting their sexual sort of context from the media, and that's mm-hmm. okay. And there's, mm-hmm. I mean, the documentary talks about how even now, like, you know, we've gotten much better about empowering women to have to be sexually sort of liberated in media. But like, that's sort of the only way a lot of people like figure it out. Because there's nothing a textbook can teach you about, you know, owning, having some ownership or, you know, autonomy in that.
Absolutely.
No matter what your gender is, no matter what kind of sex you have, like, I feel like you might as well watch someone, I don't know, like, let's just say Lil' Kim, like, have her tit out at an award show and be like, whoa, that's pretty crazy and cool.
Right.
Like, let me try to explore that part of myself. I don't know.
It is important, though, that while I think it's not necessarily destructive or any other way, one way or the other, that people get their, you know, representation of sexuality in the media, I think that's really why it's important that that representation be responsible and also be holistic. You know what I mean? Because I do think that it's different for women and men. You know what I mean? For a woman to say, I'm going to step out, like, and this is going to be the way I represent myself. Like, I think that we just have to acknowledge the fact that, like, the society treats, and we see it in the media, the way that these women are treated and the way that, you know, they get disregarded, for example, with Janet. Like, this is why I think actually it does matter that the textbooks change. Mm. It does matter that it gets addressed in schools. I think it's actually the responsibility of people educating our young humans to have a more compassionate approach, because you're talking about the media, like, yes, I do think it can be empowering, as we're all talking about, but also the media is entertainment industry is a business. And these people, these like corporations and these people that put things together are not necessarily thinking, let me responsibly educate the young people that are going to watch this about sexuality. So I think it does have to be a holistic approach. However, I think, are these empowering figures? 100%. And I think as we move forward and as we see media change, it is getting more holistic and responsible. I mean, you don't turn on HBO now and every single show has rape. I mean, at least there's a conversation about like the fact that that needs to change. So I think we're getting better, but I do think it's important that education-wise, we get more holistic, more respectful, and more informative in real ways.
Absolutely. And just to, you know, tree branch off of that, that's why at the reunion, when Andy was, you know, saying, what surgery did I have? I mm-hmm. informed him, but I also gave like a disclaimer. Women are dying from this.
Yes.
It was really important for me to find a board certified surgeon, because I know the power of this platform, and I understand it, and it's not lost on me. So I would never want someone to say, I want to do what Wendy did, but you know, maybe I want to cut costs. Well, I want to be very clear. People are dying. So if you're going to do it, go to a board certified surgeon, because, you know, I think that to what you're saying, Matt, media does have a sense of responsibility for it to be responsible what they are showing. Yes. And yes. I definitely felt that in that moment. So,
and it's great that they showed you saying that too, because as we said, they can cut around anything, because then I think you probably would have been mortified to watch it, and had they not included that, because there's a reason why you said it.
Yeah, I'm glad. At least they, you know, included one thing I like.
When you roll your eyes, like, at least I got one thing right.
It must be so frustrating. Oh, but one more thing we should commend you for before we move on to I Don't Think So, Honey, is I'm very glad they did also show you asking Ashley, do you think colorism exists in society? She says yes. Do you think it exists within this friend group? She says no. Like, that is the perfect way to sort of isolate her worldview on, not her worldview, or her view on this show.
Privilege.
That it you really kind of honed in on that in a way that I think was fair to her. You gave her an opportunity to clarify what she thought, and she still kind of talked her way out of this truth. And like Matt says this, I mean, a lot of people say this, but each Housewives franchise is about a different thing in society. You know, in New York, it's about alcoholism, and Salt Lake City, it's about religion.
Well, there's a clear issue with each thing. And I think,
okay, tell me what each one is real quick. I didn't know that. Okay, go.
Matt.
Well, I think that that something that's very dark in the New York Housewives is they all seem to have a real dependency, and they're grappling with alcohol abuse. I mean, okay. I think that it's from the very beginning, you've seen these women change, and they've all been through divorces and been through hardship and different traumas. And I think that it's something that threads them all, is it gets really dark with alcohol. And I think that that's probably the larger conversation that needs to happen. With Beverly Hills, I think, you know, there is so much about the cracks in the china, but it's about appearing a certain way, but really having really one thing go on. I mean, if you go back to the first season, second season, like, it's all about how one of the women is being abused physically to the point where she may die.
Yeah.
And one, it gets spoken out loud, and then the show takes a turn, and it's really about, like, you know, these women speaking their truth in a real way and not caring what people think. When I watch Potomac, I think that there is an issue with colorism. And I think that every time it comes up on the show, I think, you know, it's almost a shame that there can't be a more of a discussion about it, because I do think, like, me as a viewer, and, you know, I'm also very aware of the fact that I'm not the person to lead this discussion, but I do think it should be had, you know, I think that the darker skinned women are treated differently than the lighter skinned women. And for you to pose that question to Ashley and for her to shirk the responsibility, I think kind of says it all, because what we're not acknowledging is, even if she feels she doesn't behave a certain way, she's not taking in the totality of what the experience of being on the show is, which is you guys deal with the viewers and how they treat you as well. And so, you know, only you know that experience, but I do think that there is obviously a difference. That's just what I'll say.
First of all, thank you. That was so well put. But I didn't know that other people noticed it. Like, I know that there's a subsection of people who noticed it. I didn't know that all the viewers, and if I'm being very candid, viewers that are not Black noticed.
Yes.
And so that's very interesting to me that you have said that, because we just thought that it's something within Black culture that we know of because we have dealt with it our whole lives, versus everyone who sees it and they're like, no, there's colorism at play here. So wow.
It did take it coming up on the show. And like, there are, I one of my favorite recappers is Brooke Ashley, and she's on YouTube, and she talks about the show, and she makes it a point, and she's so frustrated with it that, you know, it stops her from enjoying the show often, which is a shame. But the fact is, like, when I see them get on Candace and they don't get on Ashley the same way, and they don't get on, you know, the way that Giselle and Robin can sometimes be the same way, you can't help but notice that. That's all I'll say. You know what I mean?
Wow. Wow. Fascinating.
We'll just leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that, and everyone can think about it. So now moving into our iconic segment, I Don't Think So, Honey, which is the cornerstone, the touchstone of Las Culturistas, where we take 1 minute to rant against something in culture, pop culture, whatever is grinding your gears, because it needs to be addressed correctly, as it were. I do have a topic, Bowen.
Okay, this is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, method acting. Girl, this is a mess. So I'm reading reviews for The Power of the Dog, which is the new Jane Campion movie with Benedict Cumberbatch and Kirsten Dunst. And he says he did not bathe while he was on set.
Oh, come on.
I said, if you have to do that to get into character, I don't think so, honey. That is not method acting. That does not make you a better actor. That makes you disgusting to be around. That makes you a health hazard. That makes you a safety concern. That makes me, if I'm Kirsten Dunst, very unhappy.
30 seconds.
I don't want to be around you if you smell like ass. I don't think so, honey. Method acting. Lady Gaga, we need you to be in one piece. We can't have you driving yourself crazy for 9 months pretending you're an Italian woman for House of Gucci, which, by the way, I'm seeing tonight. Very excited. I don't think so, honey.
15 seconds.
Do not drive yourself crazy, Lady Gaga. You are already crazy enough. You are just crazy enough that we love you. We don't need you going off the deep end, as you said in Shallow.
5 seconds.
I don't think so, honey. Method acting, girl. I want to talk to you on set. I don't want to talk to Mr. Magoo. I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute. Ooh. Very fair point. Beautifully put.
I'm just saying, like, if I was an actor on set and someone was in character the whole time, I'm looking at them side-eyed, because it's like, you're not this person. Also, that's what acting is. Like, right. I get that everyone does what they need to do to give a good performance, but when it comes to you not bathing for weeks, I'm like, you're not thinking about other people. This is narcissism, egomaniacal. You're only thinking about yourself.
To sort of like destroy the boundary between like what you're doing on a set and what you're doing at home, that I feel like that is slightly dangerous, because like I'm just thinking about like Daniel Day-Lewis being like Abraham Lincoln while he's like chilling on the couch, like
you're not Abraham
when
Lincoln.
He's not working. It's like how is Abe Lincoln? That is like the most egregious example to me. I'm like, how does that work? Like for you as a human being to like process through your gray matter, like how are you doing that? Like there's something damaging about that potentially.
Here's the funny thing, Daniel Day-Lewis. If you go at home and you're Abraham Lincoln, how does Abraham Lincoln negotiate a microwave? How does Abraham Lincoln work the Apple TV?
That's what I'm saying.
So don't pretend like you're Abraham Lincoln, unless he actually went to go live in a cottage, which I'm not playing it against a girl.
Probably she
did go live in a cottage with a lantern or whatever. But also Abraham Lincoln lived in the White House. You can't possibly do that. A mess. Everything about it is just all over the place. I don't understand it. And Lady Gaga, literally in all her interviews, and she's on quite the press tour for House of Gucci is like, I lived as her for 9 months and I almost broke. And when I went home, I never broke character. And I'm just like, to be a fly on the wall while she walks around her apartment, like as this woman, like, what does that even mean? Like in your quiet moments, are you losing your mind? I would go crazy. And I'm just like, I can't get past the bathing thing, like, because then you're just not thinking about your colleagues and you become someone who I would go to HR about, to be mm-hmm. honest. but the entertainment industry gets away with murder because we cater to these egos. And I'm like, I heard the performance is great and I can't wait to see the movie. So
we'll love it. We love it.
Bowen, I iconically don't know where my phone is.
Okay.
So it is your time to do I Don't Think So, Honey, and I will time you from here. But yes, there you go. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Les Moonves. If you do watch this Janet Jackson documentary, they make the case very convincingly that the whole fallout, the whole reason why her career was sort of cratered was because of him, because he was so egomaniacal to demand an apology from her for what happened, for all these FCC fines, whatever. The FCC chairman 10 years in 2014 said the reaction was overblown. And for Les Moonves to be the person who took a hammer to Janet Jackson's career and destroyed it, just shattered it, is unforgivable to me. Just as unforgivable, I'm not going to make this compare to quantify this, but as unforgivable as 15. All the sexual assaults that he sort of toxically poisoned the culture at CBS with. What a small man. Julie Chen Moonves standing by his husband, her husband. You're so awful. Just a true like simping for the white man. You're ashamed. You're truly, I'm ashamed for you as an Asian person. Do you know what I'm saying?
And that is 70 seconds, 1 minute and 10 seconds. But you know what?
Julie Chen Moonves. I got a little tongue tied.
Whenever Julie Chen Moonves, we have the opportunity to roast her, you know I'm on
you
board.
You know we're roasting her. And I say this as a Viacom CBS employee.
Oh, same.
Les Moonves, I mean, truly despicable human being. One of the most despicable human beings in the world. Anyway.
And luckily, he's banished from society. And I guess Justin Timberlake finally did offer that like limp dick apology.
Well, no, it's so funny. And then I just want to say they put Justin's apology on, you know, a text thing on the documentary. And it's so ironic that he says, I want to apologize. Well, this is what he said. I apologize to both Britney Spears and Janet Jackson individually. I mean, that sentence doesn't make any logical sense.
That doesn't make any sense because what you've done is you've lumped them together.
You've lumped them together.
What are the specific apologies? What are they?
Exactly. Anyway, that's just my thought.
We know Wendy agrees.
Yeah. Wendy agrees. She doesn't have to. Okay.
Well, this is going to be a moment for life, as Nicki Minaj once said, because Wendy Osefo is going to do, and I don't think so, honey. Do you have something in mind?
I could go off the top of my head. I guess something I watched.
Yeah, because you get paid. I mean, because baby, you get baby. Paid for your words.
I get paid baby. For my words. Okay. All right, I'm ready. All right.
Okay.
No rehearsal needed. This is Wendy Osefo's. This is Dr. Wendy Osefo's. We're going live. Dr. Wendy Osefo is, I don't think so, honey. Her time starts now.
I'm really getting tired of all of these celebrities who continue to go to space. Like Michael Strahan, like, why is your ass going to space? I am needing for people to stop this. So my issue is this. Space is one of these things that should be discovered and looked at by other people. Why is it only people who are in the top tier of society that get to take their little raggedy ass on this rocket and go up? I want to go to space. Other people want to go to space. People in Oregon want to go to space. Why don't we sign up for people to go to space?
30 seconds.
We want everybody to get like their COVID vaccine and stuff like that. Hello. Yes, we want people to get the COVID vaccine. But in the same token, the same way you guys are forcing people to get their vaccine, you should be having those same people sign up to go to space. If I get a vaccine, do I get a free trip to space? Maybe that will work. And if I get a booster, do I go to space? I don't think so, honey. So until you guys allow us to go to space, I think that we should get something. Maybe a free turkey, maybe something for Christmas. But what I do not like is these raggedy ass celebrities continue to go to space. No, honey. I'm done.
Oh my God. That was one of the best of all time.
One of the all time greats.
Right. They get to go to space. Wait,
why?
But I have to.
Why?
Point of contention for me. You want to go to space?
No, I don't. But I just want to know that other people besides these rich people can go to space.
Yes.
It's not fair. I feel like when they go up, do they get a pot of gold and come back down and we don't know about it? Like, what is up there? Why do you guys want to go? What's in there?
Wait, Michael Strahan wants to go? I missed this.
He's going. As of today, he's going to space. Right?
No, come on. Here's the thing. What did Michael Strahan do in the beginning of his career that qualified him to do all these other things? Like, he's like a daytime host. He's going to space.
He's doing all these things. He has lived. Okay, and I want to live
a million
too.
Lives.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Well, if eventually there might come a day where Dr. Wendy would want to actually go to space.
Yes.
And we just hope and pray that you have that access when that day comes, because you deserve
first housewife in on Lost Culture, first housewife in space.
Love,
the titles, the degrees.
It. The degrees. More to my utility belt. I love it.
Yes.
Oh my God. I have to tell you, this was so enjoyable. Aww, I'm such a delight so that we had you on. It was so great to get to know you a little bit better because we are, like we said, such fans on the show. And everything that, even though sometimes they edit it in a certain way, I just want to let you know, like, it's coming across. You really do carry the light, and we're big, big, big fans of yours.
Well, thank you so much. I'm forever grateful to everyone who watches the show and forever grateful to you guys who just give me positivity, because it is not something that is for the faint of heart. So, you know, you sliding in my DMs made my week. So thank you for being a light to us. I appreciate you both. Oh,
Wendy.
You guys are so
this
great.
This is true. Made my week. Thank you so much for so coming good. On and talking to
thank
us.
Thank you, Bowen. Well, thank you, Matt.
We do end every episode with a song.
Ooh.
And it's gonna, what do you think, Bo?
Is it Drive Back?
Don't you know you made me drink? Come back. You ever do can do it like that.
Like that.
Even when I catch an attitude, boy, I love to drive back home to you. I don't know why I picked her key, but that's there you go. That's gayman.com. Bye.
Bye.